Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the National Kidney Foundation of Hawaii, whose Kidney Cars program provides funding for community health and education services. Learn more about vehicle donation at kidneyhi.org.
Isaiah McCoy is in his fourth month of freedom. In January, he was acquitted in a second trial for a murder he had long maintained he didn't commit. But it took a journey to the Delaware Supreme Court, which overturned his conviction in 2015, citing prosecutorial misconduct, and ordered a new trial. Isaiah McCoy is the youngest person freed from a death sentence, and now he's speaking out to support judicial reform. He's in Hawaii this week as the featured speaker at the state capitol rally hosted by the Free Society Initiative and the Hawaii Innocence Project on Friday, and he's in our studio right now. Hi there.
How you doing?
Doing pretty well, and obviously so are you. You've been through quite an ordeal. How could it be that in the second trial, the judge said there was no physical evidence against you and also brought up the fact that the two alleged accomplices have given really contradictory testimony? Why wasn't that looked at the first time?
Well, in the first trial, it was a trial by jury. Excuse me. A jury is not experienced in the law. They generally just get in there and just do whatever they think that they want to do. They have no real standard for how they come to a conclusion. A judge, on the other hand, can't be manipulated by the prosecutor. He's a legal expert. The judge in my case had been doing this about 5 years. And,
but, I mean, not to have physical evidence seems, you know, pretty huge in front of a jury to say, you know, there wasn't physical evidence or these stories are contradictory. So going back to the issue of how the prosecutorial misconduct happened, what exactly did happen?
Oh, the prosecutor in the case, or David Favada, withheld evidence, exculpatory evidence. He lied to the judge. He improperly vouched for prosecution witnesses, and he really just polluted the whole trial from the beginning to the end. Later, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel brought up charges. He lost his job and was disbarred by the Delaware Supreme Court.
So you had a real bad actor in there.
Yes.
In this case with you, and they never, so the jury never got to see a lot of the issues that came to light in the second trial. So here you are, you've been through this ordeal of 7 years proving your innocence. Now you're in your fourth month of freedom, and you're speaking out all around the country. You've already made a move from Delaware, where you used to live. Now you're in California. You're here in Hawaii this week to talk about why we need judicial reform. What do you mean when you say judicial reform?
I think that the judicial reform just falls in on the grand scheme of everything that we're discussing and trying to educate the masses on, far as mass incarceration, the capital punishment, and injustices that take place in the world every day. Judicial reform plays a major part in what we feel is the new movement, the civil rights movement for this generation, being the things which I just outlined. And it's up to us to now take a stand on behalf of the people that have fell into this. And they're being oppressed in prisons all over the country and being oppressed by the system, period, all over the country.
So what would you like to have other millennials like you, because you're 29, do with this in terms of starting to change it? To say that it needs change is one thing, but to say here are the concrete things that we'd like to have happen, what would you like to see happen?
The first thing would be just taking advantage of all of the social media that's out there. Social media is a very powerful tool in that, you know, you can always get your voice out. You can always show support for a cause. You know, some people can do it financially. Some people can do it physically. Some people have a full life and all they can do is just tweet or put something on Facebook. But in this day and age, everything helps. You know, it's kind of like during the civil rights era when TV exposed the atrocities that were taking place in the South. That is what actually brought the change, because when you actually put the proof in someone's face, they're forced to deal with the reality of the injustice that's taking place in the world.
So you want people to be eyes and ears and more sensitized to what's happening within their own municipalities, within their own states, and what's happening in terms of how many people are incarcerated or the reasons that they're being incarcerated?
Yeah, we first want to educate the youth and others on the circumstances. And then at that point, then they would have to make the conscientious decision themselves to participate, you know.
So talk to me about those circumstances. What circumstances do you want to educate them about?
Mass incarceration. Mass incarceration is a different type of oppressive tactic that's being used, in that it's not racism, and it doesn't matter if you're black, you're white. It doesn't matter.
But we do see so many people of color who have been incarcerated.
Of course. But now it's more, we're going to discriminate because you've been in the system and you've been in the system. He's black, he's white. The common denominator is the fact that they've both been incarcerated, both been involved with the criminal justice system, whether or not it be by way of prison or probation and parole.
So I'm just trying to get my arms around some of this about how you want to change the system from within by showing what's happening with it from, you know, people's different perspectives. You say it doesn't matter if you're black or you're white or what you may be, if you've been involved with the system and you have a story to tell, that you're talking about getting those stories out into the public more to be able to sensitize them to what's happening within the judicial system?
Yes, I've had, to give you an example, I've had speaking engagements where after I was done, you know, I had like a question and answer session, and I had a 50-year-old man stand up and say, in all my years, I've never knew that things like this happen. A 50-year-old man. So we have to first educate the public that these type of atrocities take place.
You mean that people run around believing that, you know, their systems are good and things that happen for a reason, that they are just and that a process has been played out. You know, some of the things that maybe they were taught in school, but they don't necessarily sync with reality.
Like for instance, the United States, you know, was created a lot later than other countries in Europe. So they were a little bit behind, like even with slavery. Europe had abolished slavery far before, you know, the United States had actually took that step. And there's just other things like that, which...
See this as part of sort of, you know, our growth as a country, to be able to understand through our own maturation process that the way we handle, you know, what happens within the judicial system is not necessarily as great as we think it is. I mean, we know that mistakes are made. We've seen other cases within innocence projects across the country and certainly here in Hawaii. So if you're saying, okay, they make mistakes, what do you want people to do? What pressure are you asking them to bring to the situation, aside from, you know, putting out on Facebook or Twitter? What do you want them to really do? As you're going to be speaking to law school students this week and speaking up at the Capitol, what do you want them to do?
Well, the United States, we have a very peculiar criminal justice system. You know, when you look at the amount of people that's incarcerated in our country, you know, so it's just time to really, 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 really educate the youth on this first and let them know, like, you don't expect 100 things to get done at one time. You know, each generation, I guess I would call it a checklist. We have some things, you know, this outline that we want to check all one by one by one.
Does that start with knowing what their rights are now and where they could proceed from if something were to happen, that they have to know exactly what their starting point is and not to make assumptions?
Yes, and I feel, though, in my lifetime, I feel like we can bring an end to police brutality. I feel like we can bring an end to mass incarceration. We can bring an end to capital punishment. I feel like we have the power to do this. All the things that we have here that people didn't have 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago, all the support, you know, all the technology, it's amazing. So with us having these things, let's use these gifts that we were given, you know, and do something that will be beneficial to mankind.
Isaiah McCoy, I wish we had more time. Thank you for being here. I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
After 7 years on death row, Isaiah McCoy is the youngest person freed from a death sentence. He'll detail his dramatic reversal and speak on justice reform as the featured speaker at the state capitol rally hosted by the Free Society Initiative and the Hawaii Innocence Project on Friday. And that's going to do it for us for the conversation for this day 8 of the Spring Pledge Drive. We're going to go back now to Pledge Central.